南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Okay, I think we've got our sound taken care of. Having some issues this morning. I think I got it all figured out. Namo myoho renge kyo. Hello. Thanks for being here. Hope you're healthy, feeling well and secure. We're going to continue with talks on the Maha Parinirvana Sutra, the Mahayana Parinirvana Sutra. Typically just called the Nirvana Sutra, but distinctly different from the Parinirvana or Nibbana Hinayana teaching. Not the same at all. Have so many things going through my mind right now. I just reread some of a book of Bhante Vimala Ramsey. He's a monk who spent 6 to 8 years in Burma, and then went to Malaysia, practiced Visipassana meditations. Came to discover that that was a misled and erroneous teaching of sorts, and started to learning more and more about mindfulness, breathing meditations, and beyond, with the Theravadan focus. Again, it's all early Buddhism, but it's interesting because he wrote a book, the Anapanasati Sutta. As I said, he spent, in total, over a dozen years in Asia. And then he came back to the United States, settled in Missouri. And he has his own meditation center there. A center not unlike the retreat that I was hoping to create here at one point. Just these little bedrooms. Houses. He can handle up to 14 people, I think it says on his site. And they practice mindful loving kindness meditation. But the words he uses in his book, it's fascinating. Being a modern man, as I am, and we're probably not far apart in age, actually, now that I think of it. He has chosen words, even though he's quoting the dialogue of Shakyamuni Buddha. He is using words that are very familiar to you who are accustomed to me talking about formations and energy and so forth. Is he practicing the wrong Buddhism? Well, if he's practicing Buddhism, there's no wrong, per se, Buddhism. And that's something I wanted to say ahead of this Nirvana talk. Only that we, you and I, are extremely privileged to have found the practice of the Lotus Sutra, the ultimate culminating teachings of Shakyamuni, on how to experience Buddhahood immediately, right now, simply with little effort. And certainly with the lens of incredible insight that Nichiren brings to it. It's an amazing opportunity, clarity, gift to have that. But it's also our human nature to look at something that seems so straightforward and easy as though, well, it must not be complete, or it must not suffice, or how can it be this straightforward, this easy? How is it that I can just sit down in front of this chicken scratching and chant Namo Myoho Renge Kyo and presto changeo, I'm Buddha? Well, obviously there's a few issues at play there. And it is with our study that we begin to uncover the complexity that culminates in that simplicity. Now, suddenly, that simplicity ain't so simple. There's a lot going on there. I didn't understand that before. Well, what about this? And then you start asking questions. Well, I get how that's so much different, but that leads me to wonder about this. Well, let me go down that rabbit hole. And the more we research, and the more we study, the deeper, the broader our appreciation for what is within the simple practice of Myoho Renge Kyo. Why do we need that mandala? What is its purpose in focusing, broadening, experiencing this, whatever it is I call Buddha, or Buddha mind, or Buddhahood, or Buddha nature? What is all of that? And why do I want it? What opportunity does it present for me? Me, 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 me. I want it, but I don't want to have to work for it. Right? The great karmic disease of samsara. And the irony is that what Bhante writes about here in his mindful meditation, loving kindness meditation, and the words he uses point to exactly the same thing. But the ultimate irony is, if you really understand, if you've been studying along with me, for instance, or on your own, and you've come to the realizations of what I've talked about as far as energy, states of energy, which I will this time, I cannot forget to put that image up on this video. I forgot on the last one, my apologies. YouTube doesn't provide a mechanism for posting images in the comments, or in the description for that matter. You can't attach, like on Patreon I've attached this chart, and I've actually ameliorated it, improved it, added to it this morning in order to post it. So I'll have to post it anew on Patreon. At any rate, my point is this, and we will get to this Antipasati Sutta by Bhante. because I want to point out a clarity of mind in his dialogue that is the fundamental shift in Shakyamuni's teachings from the early teachings. You can group them as the one, the small vehicle, the Hinayana, but you don't have to. They're just the early teachings, as opposed to the more developed, more scholarly Mahayana teachings. And that is that although at a superficial, quick reading of very similar, if not identical, wording, the intent in the discussion on these meditations is centered on the individual, the abolition of self, is very much within samsara. The liberation, the shutdown of the mind, the opening of a liberated self is the actual focus of Hinayana. It is, although tantalizingly similar to what we read about later in the Lankavatara and in the Nirvana, the Lotus, later Mahayana, the focus is a precipitous shift. It really is a schism. Chasm and schism together, schism. Sorry. That the shift takes the same mechanism of understanding the way the mind works and how it plays into our tremendous ownership possession and how we can break loose of that, and restates it all in the much more pervasive initial goal of this practice, and that is enlightenment for all through each and every one of our individual efforts. In another way, if you're familiar with language issues like solipsism, which is offered as a particular point of view, but is also easily destroyed because there truly is no such thing as solipsism, which implies that each one of us or anything can live within itself. That's maybe ideologically or psychologically an argumentative point to influence a certain kind of thinking, but it doesn't take very much work by a very early student of that term to understand that it's an impossibility, because everything, as Buddha has dissected infinitely, everything is dependent on its environment. There is no such thing as solipsism. It's an ideological point of view, but it's unreal. It's unachievable. In the very nature of it stating itself, it's a ridiculous proposition, because everything is codependent. Everything originates and exists within something else. That is the nature of space-time. Even space-time exists within quiescence. And quiescence has no space-time. That can be a very powerful stumbling block. But therein lies the rub. It's not about you losing yourself. It's about you finding the true self, the self that is uninhibited, unattached, unhindered, that is just part of a process ongoing, not an identity. What's the difference, Sifu? That's why we study, so that you can understand in your own mind, in your own way, in your own experience, that uncoupling. That's the old chart. Bye-bye. All right. Let's go back to the start, near the start anyway. We start with the virtue of the name. The name being, in this case, of this sutra. This great nirvana is the foremost of all. If we study other sutras, we always long for beautiful tastes. When once we hear this Mahiparinirvana, however, one long ceases to covet the beautiful tastes mentioned in other sutras. This great nirvana well enables all beings to cross the sea of all existences. There's that raft analogy again. O good man, of all footprints, that of the elephant is best. The same is it is with this sutra. Of all the samadhis of the sutras, that of this sutra is best. O good man, of all the tillings of the field, that done in autumn is best. The same with this sutra. It is the best of all sutras. It is like Sarpiramanda, which is the best of all medicines. It thoroughly cures the feverish worries and maddening minds of beings. This great nirvana is the foremost of all. It is like sweet butter, which contains the eight tastes. The same also applies to this sutra. It contains the eight tastes. What are the eight? These are, it is eternal. It is, it always is. It is peaceful. It is pure and cool. It does not grow old. It does not die. It is taintless. And eight, it is pleasing and happy. These are the eight tastes. It possesses these eight tastes. This is why we say Mahiparinirvana. Now, all Bodhisattva Mahasattvas peacefully abide in this and manifest nirvana in all places. That is why we say Mahiparinirvana. O Kashyapa, all good men and women who desire to enter nirvana by this Mahaparinirvana must study well the fact that the Tathagata is eternal and that the Dharma and Sangha are eternal. Now, to that repeated exhortation of eternal and what the Shakyamuni means, the best of all medicines, cures the fervish worries and maddening minds of beings. All of this is in reference, and I don't want to read the whole sutra, obviously, to the lotus. And he says as much in here, and if I find those exact stanzas, I will read them to you. Bodhisattva Kashyapa says to the Buddha, all is wonderful, O world-honored one. We cannot conceive of the Tathagata's depths of virtue. The same is the case with the virtues of Dharma and Sangha. This Mahaparinirvana is also inconceivable. One who studies this sutra will gain the right eye of Dharma and become a good doctor. Anybody who has not studied this sutra should know, is like a blind person, not possessing the eye of wisdom and overshadowed by ignorance. So again, what is he talking about? On the four aspects he goes into after that. Rightness in one's own self. Correcting others. Complying well with the teachings and discussing. Understanding well causal relations. Where does that all come from? Why are those four aspects of practicing correctly? These are things, once again, I will remind you, that the Mahayana teachings are still teachings to the benefit of others' capacities. The lotus is specific to the Buddha's experience. And now with the nirvana, as he's leaving, Once again, he's back to addressing people's concerns, to their experience. So in the Lotus, you don't get this kind of dissection of rules and things of that nature. You get a lot of discussion about what happens as a result of your actions, but not a tremendous amount of dissections of those exact actions. The only thing you could point to in the Lotus Sutra that's really anything like this or other sutras is the embracing, reading, writing, copying, distributing, reading, writing, read, recite, distribute, copy, right? That's repeated several times in the Lotus Sutra. Do this as I'm doing and inculcate it into your library and share it with others. Do this, record it, share it. Bodhisattva. It's an exhortation. Whereas things like the four aspects of coursing as a bodhisattva, the rightness in one's own self, which one discovers in the Hinayana and throughout the Mahayana, but the Hinayana is strictly focused on getting yourself right. What is a self? How is it constructed? And how can I be a self without being a self? Correcting others. See how critical a point this is? Don't just be right and let everyone else screw up. It's your duty as a bodhisattva to redirect the energies of others who either don't get it, have gone astray, or are outright doing wrong. Not because you're a police officer, not because you're righteous, but because you're compassionate. Oh, you're doing so much work, you're doing so much, but you're not going to get to your goal. Let me show you where you could improve. You might have to let go of some of this. You might have to relearn some of this. Let me give you a different perspective. Whatever your channel in, it's still a correction. Even only by your influence. Even by your refusal to do something that someone who's going the wrong way is asking of you. No, I can't do that. Let them ask why not. Because this represents a deviation from the correct path. What do you mean? Well, don't take it personally. This is about your Buddhahood. In that spirit, we can talk about it. There's all sorts of ways to approach this without being confrontational. That doesn't mean there won't be confrontations. It's all about how you deal with confrontation. Right? Attitude, intent. Complying well with the teachings and discussing it, which is what we're doing right now. Understanding well causal relationships. And the causal relationship that I've been focusing on of late is this idea of catching the energy formations, albeit from a stage where we are in the forms. This is samsara, an experience of form. But if we can begin to unlock the nature of formation, how does my aspect of being become formed? Not I am this, I am that, that is that, that is this. How does this come to be? From whence are the energies that produce something which ultimately isn't produced? Because that production is a state of mind adhering to a product. Seeing the formation of the product, I understand that the formation is the energy at work and the product is an item of my imagination. It's a label. It's a thingifying of a process of energy that's simply going by. And I'm hanging on to it. I'm making this out of that, the distinction, the separation that that involves. That's what he means when he says the well understanding of in one's own self, the rightness in one's own self. That's what that's about. And I'll put that form up for a little while. Really look at the stages of energy there. The most mind-boggling one, I will submit, at least from my point of view, is the bracket I have around bodhisattva practice and the perception around bodhisattva practice and the distinction between that and enlightenment, Buddha. At both ends of the scale, it's the quiescent energy that is Buddha, that is eternal, for lack of a better word, always there, as he was saying in the Nirvana. It always is. It is unchanging, really. But this little perturbation that we experience as samsara, in samsara, in the mind of samsara, seems to us everlasting. At least that's what we want it to be. But that is the center bracket that bodhisattva courses through, courses in. And it includes the formation energy, the form energy, the abiding or not abiding is not a good word, the endurance. That's the amount of clinging as it wears out, right? The decay. All of that is where space and time is perceived. Space and time is. This is where we talk about, understand what this means. This is where we talk about previous life, afterlife, it's birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. It's all in here. In the formation and the cessation, the extinction. So where did all this come from and where does it go? The quiescent energy. But when energy is quiescent, when it isn't forming anything, and when it isn't absorbing anything or ceasing, when it's just energy, potential energy, then there is no mass. I should add that to the chart too. Because the moment energy turns to formation energy, mass comes about. And only when there is mass is there space-time. Space-time. Space is time, time is space. They are interlocked like a tension. That's the edge of the understanding right there. That if you can then see within the bodhisattva arena, the space-time arena, how the space-time is a condition of non-space-time, that it is a temporary instantiation, a perturbation, an agitation of the quiescent energy. Then there's emptiness. Then there's a lack of grasping, clinging, there's a perception. There's a profound understanding and a deep compassion for the others, other participants, the other minds who don't see that. Oh, relax. Oh, your emotions, you're so high, low, you're so perturbed. Look at the bigger picture, back away. Look at, it's fascinating. Wow, while we're here, let's enjoy it for its temporariness. Let's experience it. Let's lament over it. But let's not invest self, invest this mind, this perceptive apparatus into it. Let's not become it. Let's observe it and participate in it without identification in it. These are all words. Some might work for you, some might not so sure. But maybe a chart like this helps you see it, clear dividing lines. How to dissect this whole experience and understand that Buddhahood is this equanimous energy that perceives the entire picture rather than portions, or by the time you educate and practice enough, you attain a bodhisattva clarity about what's going on and you touch that Buddhahood, but you remain in this time space of experience to bear witness, to liberate others, until you and I again cease, go extinct. Whew. Then everything is Buddha. It's not, there's no I, there's no self. There's just noumena, potential, no perturbations, no formations. Yeah? Now maybe that lasts an angstrom of a second. Maybe it lasts, but how is that even relevant, right? An angstrom of a second. Well, that's time space. Space time. Ain't there. Well, how do you know it exists then? We know it exists because this agitation is of it and returns to it. So, of course it's there. But there's no way to define it other than it's quiescent. And only when you reach that level of understanding, can only be shared amongst Buddhas, will you then understand what it is. And gloriously, you get to understand it while you're still in this mélange. Namo myoho renge kyo. This is what happens when you fuse with mandala, when you fuse with your gohonzon, and everything becomes little sparks of light. Because you see the true nature of everything as a constructed reality. That doesn't mean you leave it or that it is destroyed. It is your perception, your paradigm that changes, your paradigm, right? Your paradigm of ownership, reality, touching, feeling, form. It's a construction. I know, it's rough on the mind. But know this, that when you focus and you stand or sit erect, attentive, and you focus on your mandala, myoho renge kyo, you shut down the noise from the other consciousnesses that you're using to navigate this samsaric reality. And they all join in to that ninth consciousness. It happens. It just happens. And when it does, you know. When it does, you don't want to stop. Time ceases to matter. How can that be? How much time's gone by? My goodness, we've been chanting for hours. There were a couple of times when I thought, oh my God, I can't say anything. That's your monkey mind coming in going, stop. Stop doing this. You want an ice cream. Right? But you blast through it. No. I want to experience Buddha. Single-mindedly. Namo myoho renge kyo. There it is. Well, I couldn't chant anymore. I got filled up. I mean, you've been doing that for an hour. Really? I thought I just went another 5 minutes. No, you've been there. Really? What happened to space-time? You do it already. You're of it. That's why it's so easy to do it. This is what Shakyamuni means when Buddhahood is already there. You need to clarify your consciousnesses to see it, be it, experience it. Okay. Yeah. Kind of a short one for today. But Sylvain, don't forget to put up the freaking image. I'm going to put it up this time for you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Got some great new support from the UK. A lot of you speaking up. I'm sure there's more of you from all over the world. Some of you join the Sangha and you remain quiet and studious, and that's fine. You're also very much a support. Your energy is truly appreciated. I'm proud of every single one of you. I'm finding out how much it is to ship things in this new era. Man. Everything costs so much money. I guess I've been disconnected from the capitalist world for a long time, long enough to feel it's somewhat foreign to me. But we do what we must do. So with that in mind, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, please take care of your health. Be kind to yourself. Only that way can you be kind to others. And I will see you soon in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Bye for now. I just can't stop myself saying that. Whatever your channel in, it's still a correction. Even only by your influence. Even by your refusal to do